All right, starting things off a little different today, as you can hear, kicking off with a track. It's 5 o'clock, maybe a few minutes after 5 now, time for American Hit Radio on 90.3 WHPC. I'm your host, Tom Ryan, my lovely wife, Heidi Morales Ryan, here as well for the next hour. We're bringing you an album, which is going to have to bring it to you in two parts because it's a long one. We have been, of course, working our way through two lists, the top 500 of the top 40 and the alternative top 40. This is an album that went to number one, so it qualifies, of course, among the hit albums on our list. This is album number 111 from that top 500 of the top 40 list. It happens to be George Harrison's album, All Things Must Pass. It's a triple album. So we're going to be looking at, I'm going to try to squeeze the triple album in two shows, which explains why we're hearing this jam session in the background while I talk. The album itself consisted, like I said, well, three albums, six sides. Four of them are what you would call like legitimate written songs. And sides five and six were sort of freeform jams, a bit loose, a bit weird. Part of the album, nonetheless, but I figured it would be maybe a good idea for me to, like, rather than ignore it entirely, let one of those tracks introduce the show. This track we're hearing right now, for example, is entitled Thanks for the Pepperoni. It's mostly on this album. It's George Harrison playing with members of Delaney and Bonnie's Road Band. That includes Eric Clapton, people like Billy Preston, Ringo Starr, Klaus Voormann, members of Badfinger, Pete Drake. All of these people were contributing on this album. And the jams were just a part of like what was happening while they were meeting, getting together. Regarding the album itself, all these years later, 50 years ago, more than that, actually. Well, not quite, excuse me. It was November 1970 when this album came out. And I can still remember the ambivalent feeling of knowing that the Beatles had disbanded back around then in 1970. The thought of there being no more Lennon-McCartney compositions was bad enough. And 1970 left me as a kid with a very serious sense of uncertainty about the future of music. I mean, having grown up with the Beatles, literally providing the soundtrack to my life. I remember a feeling that was something like a vacuum, knowing that this could never be replaced. The only consolation that I could expect at the time was that there might be more music coming from each of them. But John Lennon's early experimental releases, Life with the Lions, Unfinished Music, The Wedding Album, that didn't really leave me with a lot of hope about what was going to happen. And McCartney's first effort is another one. Like at the time, I just thought, oh my God, this is like such a long shot from what the Beatles were about. So it left me wary of what we were in for. The Beatles disbanding just sounded as though the individual pieces were going to be minuscule compared to what they were as a group.
They didn't have each other pushing each other.
Right, right. And even as a Beatle, George never had more than two songs per album. So I expected that at the rate that he was writing, that he'd maybe be able to eke out one album every 5 years or so. Who could have imagined a triple album from George Harrison coming out within a year of the breakup of the Beatles? Who could? The only problem that I had at the time was that I couldn't afford the damn thing. It was too expensive. I was a kid. A triple album was a lot of money. So I ended up gobbling up the singles, which were awesome. And years later, I finally obtained my own copy, and I still treasure this album. So this show represents part one in a two-part series dedicated to this album. What we didn't know was that George Harrison was accumulating an incredible wealth of material that Lennon and McCartney simply weren't interested in using. And they were too busy, you know, putting their own tracks on their albums. And I mean, you can't blame them because they were a hit machine. But by 1968, George was becoming something of a hit machine himself. as you can tell by looking at the Beatles' last recorded studio album, Abbey Road. He wrote Here Comes the Sun and Something, two of the biggest hits from that album. So George had other songs that he was contributing, trying to get placed during the Let It Be sessions, even more to put on to Abbey Road. And the Beatles weren't interested. So George gets himself lined up with Phil Spector, of all people, to do productions, ends up with this Wagnerian sort of an album, not only in scope, because Wagner, of course, we know that he makes these monstrously huge productions that go on for days in terms of his operas, and they're gigantic in terms of the orchestration that's involved. Well, that's what this album is, in a sense. It's a rock and roll version of Wagner. It's got all of the sound is just immense, and the size is immense, being a triple album. How many triple albums were there in 1970?
None that I can recall.
I remember one, which was Woodstock. Oh. And that also came out that very same year. So that might have been the first one I had ever heard of. So they came out in close succession, one to the other. So let's pick it up. We got a lot of songs to play. Here's the opening track from All Things Must Pass by George Harrison. It's called I'd Have You Anytime.
Thank you.
first single released from the album and a huge hit for George in the wake of news of the Beatles' breakup. I believe it was the first number one song by a solo Beatle, My Sweet Lord. We should talk a little bit, of course, about the eventual lawsuit that was incurred because of the Chiffons, based upon whoever owned the rights to it. The Chiffons really didn't do it, but the people who owned the song, He's So Fine, sued because of the similarity of He's So Fine, Whoa, So Fine. I remember that really angered me. It still sort of does.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're talking about that, you could say that a song is stolen based upon similarities of about maybe three notes, then it's really sad. And I mean, you could go on to say, well, yeah, but when he goes da-da-da-da-da-da-da, that the Chiffons song kind of went there too. I guess I'm of two minds because in some ways I hear it, but I'm also thinking this is rock and roll. The mood of the song could not be more different. The tempo is drastically different. And the thing that made that song a hit, that made My Sweet Lord so wonderful, had nothing to do with that melody, to be honest.
Right.
It was that fabulous slide guitar that George's style was just beginning to develop. It was the first time that we really heard that. He wasn't doing that on the Beatles albums. Now he's suddenly out of the soul crew and he's got this unbelievably cool slide sound that with him harmonizing with himself, overdubbing and playing these beautiful runs. I mean, that's why that song went to number one. It was a totally unique approach to a musical instrument that everybody loved hearing. So there. Ultimately, I come down on George's side, even when I am of two minds. I should mention that the first track, I'd Have You Anytime, was a song that he had co-written with Bob Dylan. When George had come to America, well, he was really getting disenchanted with the Beatles in 1968. Especially, this is like when they were doing the Let It Be sessions, and he had even quit temporarily because it was just so uncomfortable. And he ended up in Woodstock, where he met the band and Bob Dylan. And he really liked the fact, this is almost ironic, he really liked the fact that there was so much equanimity between the members of the band. Everybody seemed to be creatively equal. Little did he know that Robbie Robertson was going to basically claim 100% of the songwriting and let everybody else suffer.
Right.
So nothing was quite as perfect as it looked. But he did get to write with Bob Dylan at that time, and that's where I'd Have You Anytime came from. Speaking of Sour Grapes and such, that's where this next song came from. When he was in the middle of the Let It Be sessions and he was fighting with McCartney and Lennon, who were basically denying George's input for songs. And it frustrated him. He actually even quit for a while. And it was around that time when he wrote this song about how hard it is to communicate with your own bandmates. It's called Wawa. 90.3 WHPC.
Yeah. that thinking anymore. Forgetting to give back. Isn't it a pity? Some things take so long
something that probably everybody but me recognized that I'm really slow on the uptake, but that is almost certainly a musical like reference back to the Beatles doing Hey Jude.
It's, yes.
You know, it did not occur to me for decades. I heard the song, like I said, I couldn't buy the album when I was a kid. A triple album maybe cost like $18 or something, and there was no way I was going to come up with that much money. So, I mean, I could barely buy, you know, if I bought 5 albums a year back then, I was quite the collector. So triple album wasn't going to happen. But I did buy the singles, and that was the B-side of My Sweet Lord. And the other thing that makes it very, I mean, the construction of the song, the way it starts, like Hey Jude does, it's got a medium tempo and it slowly builds as it goes on. And then it comes up with a vocal phrase at the end that they repeat over and over again for about 3 or 4 minutes to bring it up to a length, which I think is exactly the same as Hey Jude. If I remember, Hey Jude was 7 minutes and 11 seconds. And or that version of Isn't It a Pity, which was the B-side of My Sweet Lord, was 7 minutes and 11 seconds. So
How about that?
I guess they figured out that they could put a song that long on a single. They already did it, so George said, put it on the B-side. Why not? But that was a single that I played a lot on both sides because I thought Isn't It a Pity was a beautiful song. Even as a kid, I still love it. This album is amazing, and you can hear the huge Phil Spector going totally hog wild. Even George Harrison was a bit taken aback when he was hearing the final mixes because he had them, everything was relatively nice and clean. You could hear the separation of instruments and everything else. And then Spector puts all 5 guitars that were recorded onto the track and adds the horns and the strings and 3 drummers and 4 percussionists.
Oh my God.
And then adds echo to everything. George Harrison was like, what have you done? And yet,
look what they've done to my song.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And yet it got released that way. And that's the version we've got. And it is wonderful, either despite or because of Phil Spector, depending on your perspective. It really, it's great irregardless. All right. I mentioned that the thing that really freaked me out about this album as a kid was, you know, my desire to want it so badly, even though I couldn't afford it, were the singles. My Sweet Lord was the first, and Is It a Pity being on its B-side, as I had mentioned. Well, here's the second single, and I remember this specifically because I still own it. I still have the picture sleeve that it came in when I bought it in 1970, and I bought one of those little 45 RPM toting like cases, like a red plastic case, which had like the little number things. You could put like record number 1 would be this. This was record number 3 of me starting fresh with my singles collection, because in 1970, I decided I'm getting back into music. So I was a kid, but I didn't have an organization system. This was when I was getting organized, and it was 1970. And What Is Life, with its picture sleeve, was number 3. I think number 1 was Me and You and a Dog Named Boo. I'm not positive, but it's the way I remember it. Anyway, here's What Is Life on 90.3 WHPC.
I can't say. for you. The winter would hold no spring. Couldn't hear a robin sing. I just wouldn't have a clue. If not for you.
Fabulous version of that song. It is. The first time I ever heard that song, I believe, was George Harrison's version. Although I'm not 100% positive, because Olivia Newton-John recorded a version very close to this time, and she lifted the guitar riff from this record and gave it a certain lilt. It's a Bob Dylan song, and it's George's way of basically, you know, tipping his hat to one of his favorite songwriters. And in fact, as I understand it, he wrote this next song for Bob Dylan, since when he met Dylan, Dylan was living in seclusion in upstate New York, pretty much hiding from the rest of the world. And it inspired George to write this song about Dylan's predicament called Behind That Locked Door on 90.3.
Still crying, your pain is now through. Please forget those teardrops, let me take them from you. The love you are blessed with. Told me from the things that you
Now, really, ask yourself, considering that we aren't even halfway through the album and we have another half to cover next week, you can perhaps understand why a lot of people, including me, feel that this very well might be the most realized solo Beatles record ever made by any of the Beatles. It's rather incredible. And I'm sorry for not talking as much as I usually do, full of like the being the font of information I would like to be. I'm sure you really miss me going on and on and on.
Of course, I do.
But I want to be sure to get in as much of the music as possible. Like I said, it's a triple album in 2 weeks. So we're going to leave you with the song that ended side two, and we'll let that run into one of the jams. We'll get in as much as we can of that. And then we'll be back next week to show you that sides three and four are just as good as what we've just heard. It's rather incredible. The song here is called Run of the Mill, and as that runs out, the jam track is called I Remember Jeep. Take care, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see you next. Oh, by the way, don't go anywhere. You got to stay tuned for Zach. His next show coming up is incredible. It's an anniversary show based upon this very week in 1968. I looked at the tracks. It's fabulous. There's some of my favorite music of all time on this show. So stay tuned for Zach's show, Countdown, a classic countdown, coming up in about 10 minutes. Take care, all. Bye-bye. Thank you.
decide which way you turn while feeling that our love is not your concern. To the decide.
This show on 90.7